that commission's March 21st, 2020 concurrent meeting of the Structural Technical Advisory Committee and the Hurricane Research Advisory Committee. I'll go through a few things in a moment. So what we're going to do is we're going to convene both meetings, assuming we have a quorum, open up each group, and after we do the first part of the business, which relates to the Hurricane Research Advisory Committee, we'll adjourn the HRAC and then continue with structural TAC to take a look at the comments received on the draft rule of the code. So first order of business is to talk about our teleconference participation process, since we're going to be doing quite a few of these, and the numbers will be getting larger, especially with code items. The main thing is to keep your phones on mute, and you have, and if you're on the computer, which is even the better way, there's the mute function, the little microphone that you click on, and the GoToMeeting panel. I just realized y'all weren't even able to hear me. Okay, so this is Chris Howell. Have you started the recorder? Huh?
I was hearing you, Jeff.
Okay, well, somehow my thing just said it was muted. So y'all did hear what I was saying. Okay, good.
Yeah, we got it.
Yeah.
All right, so there, use your mute functions on. Maybe it didn't like the fact that I mentioned it. It muted me through the audio on your system, or if you're using your phone. But don't put, if you're on a phone, don't put it on hold. I will call on people in turn. I'll stack names to make sure everybody gets a chance to talk. We want to do it in an orderly way. Please state your name each time you speak. And TAC and committee members, when you're making a motion, please state your name for the motion and the second. But in general, all participants should state their name each time they speak so that Chris will be able to keep an accurate record in the minutes. That's our basic process. So what I'm going to do first is determine whether we have a quorum for the structural TAC, starting with our chair, Commissioner Schock. Jim?
I'm here, Jeff.
Very good. Commissioner Compton, Dave?
Here.
All right. Cy for pardon, Cy. All right. Jamie Gascon, Jamie?
Here.
Very good. Michael Garastio, Michael?
Here.
Joe Hetzel, Joe? All right, Doe Kim, Doe?
I'm here.
All right, Dan Laveridge, Dan?
Here.
CW McComber, CW?
Here.
Craig Perino, Craig? All right, Steve Strawn, Steve?
Hey, good morning, I'm here.
Good morning, must be pretty early your time.
Yeah, normal.
All right, so we have eight, so we have a quorum, but let me just double check to see if anybody else has come on. Cy, are you there? Or Joe Hetzel? Or Craig? All right, well, we have eight. We only need six. Let me do the same thing for the Hurricane Research Advisory Committee, determine that we have a quorum, and then we'll introduce those of us that are else just facing. All right. Hurricane Research Advisory Committee members, Commissioner Schock, Jim?
Here. Yeah, I'm here, Jeff.
All right. Sergio Ascunce? All right. Joe Belcher? Somebody's is in a car phone that's probably in the car. It's bringing a lot of background noise. You want to mute your phone. Commissioner Compton?
Belcher's here.
Here. Yeah.
All right, Ann Cope. Yep, I got Belcher and Compton. Ann Cope.
I'm here.
Mark Mickelson.
Good morning, Jeff. This is Mark. I'm here. I don't know if anybody else is having problems using the GoToMeeting. I've tried unsuccessfully several times. Thank you.
Well, try going to the structural TAC agenda on the same page just to see if that link works better. Because I tried it three times yesterday and today, and so far it's worked perfectly. But I have been accessing it from the structural TAC agenda. It's the same link, but maybe get that a shot and see if you can get on that one. So Marcus, Craig Perino, are you here yet or not? No. All right, Bud Plish?
Present.
Aye. Angela Shadell?
I'm here.
Brad Schiffer?
I'm here.
Jeffrey Schnellman? Vince Sejas?
Vince Sejas is here.
Ryan Swope?
Here.
All right, let me check one more time on... getting some background. Sergio Ascunce, are you here? Craig Perino? Or Jeffrey Schnellman? All right, well, we have 10 of our members of 13, so we have a quorum for both. Okay, so let's introduce those of us in Tallahassee. I'll start myself. I'm Jeff Blair, the commission's facilitator. Tom Campbell, are you there?
I'm on.
All right, Mo Madani?
I'm on.
Justin Vogel?
I'm on.
Chris Howell?
Chris Howell?
Chris, you're on.
She's on.
Yeah, she's on.
And I'm muting caller number 31 because we get a lot of background noise from that particular caller. They need to be. So if you're getting muted in and out, that's because we're getting noise from you, that individual.
And Jim Hammers is here as well, Jim. And then our structural tech. Is Chip or anybody on? Whoever's doing our structural tech, any other staff members on?
Joe Bigelow.
Joe, sorry, yeah, Joe. Joe, you on?
Marlita Peters.
All right, got Joe and Marlita. Anybody else? Okay, so we have a good compliment from Tallahassee, and we're ready to roll. So what I'm going to do first is I'm going to go back to the structural tech and just do procedural stuff, and then go back to the research committee and do the same. So. We've determined we have a quorum, and I want to review today's agenda. Today's agenda is to review and accept the interim and draft report, which is the phase two experimental evaluation of pressure equalization factors and wind resistance of vital siding systems using a multi-chamber pressure test bed, and to provide the commission with comments on, with recommendations on those comments received to their draft rule for their consideration at the April 7th rule development workshop. And that's our business. Is there a motion to accept for the structural tack the agenda as it was posted?
Compton moved to approve.
Move to accept as posted.
All right, we have Compton and Leverage. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. All right, you received electronically in advance of this meeting, attached to the BCIS, of course, the January 28th meeting minutes. Are there any revisions or corrections? And if not, is there a motion to accept the report as it was posted?
Well, let's come to accept.
All right, we have a motion. All right, we have a motion and a second. Very good. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. All right, Hurricane Research Advisory Committee, your agenda today is to approve the minutes from the last meeting. And then to also accept the report that I just read into the record for the structural tack, and afterwards to talk about what next steps are, and then to adjourn, and then the structural tack will continue to meet to go over the code stuff. Is there a motion to accept or approve the agenda as it was posted?
Elker, move approval.
Schiffer, second.
All right, we have a motion and a double second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It is unanimous. All right. Same minutes you received, or they were attached to the BCIS, the January 13, 2020 HRAC minutes. Is there a motion to accept the minutes unless there are any corrections or revisions?
Schiffer will move acceptance.
Shocker, second.
The motion and a second from Schiffer and Shock, respectively. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. All right, we've opened both things. I want to remind folks that please wait till I call on you to speak. I'll make a list of names. Everybody will have their opportunity. And the order of business I have to work concurrently between the two committees is to review and accept the interim draft report. Mo, would you like to say something before I turn it over to David?
Yeah, this is Mo Madani.
Good morning. As Jeff has stated, mainly this item on the agenda for mainly reviewing and accepting the interim report for research project as titled. This phase, or the project is phase two. As you recall, we did phase one under last year research program. For this year, the commission for the 2019-2020 fiscal year approved phase two of this project. The objective of this project is mainly through lab setting is to evaluate the pressure equalization factor and wind resistance of vinyl siding, ultimately to come up with specifications can be used to set the level of pressure equalization factors that could be included in the code and for further, evaluation to determine the wind resistance of vinyl sidings. David, on the line with us to provide for, a presentation. I think David and Jeff, take it from here. Thank you, guys.
All right, so before we start, David, I'd like to request, unless David feels otherwise, that you hold your questions until David completes the report. I think we'll go more orderly since we're not in a face-to-face setting. Does that work for you, David?
Yes, that does work. Thank you.
Okay, so take it away, David.
Okay, good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Privat at University of Florida. Probably one of the few people in this large university this morning. I hope everyone is doing well. Let me see if I could get this up and running. Okay. So as Mo Madani explained, this is the second phase of experimental evaluation of the pressure equalization factors for vinyl siding using a multi-chamber pressure test bed. Firstly, let me just express my hope that everyone is safe and that they're sheltering in place or what have you. UF has closed down. Most of our students are at home. Most of our staff are working at home. And last night, Alachua County has issued from midnight a shelter-in-place or stay-home decision. So it's the best of times, and it's today's agenda is going to be pretty brief. We're just going to go through the tasks as scheduled in the proposal and on our contract with the FBC. Again, my apologies. As we learn to work online, you have received the report, which is on uploaded to the FBC site for this meeting yesterday. And that is all on me for doing this. So let's, without much ado, go straight through the research tasks. You can follow in the report as well, or you can follow with the presentation that we go through. Why are we doing this? There is the notion started by several researchers in building cladding systems that laboratory-based determination of the performance of vinyl siding and other discontinuous cladding systems are affected by this relationship called the pressure equalization factors. This effort is to see if there is a method using the existing research work to develop a standard way in which these PEFs can be measured. Our rationale ultimately was to decide whether the work that IBHS, Western University, and Florida International University have done over several years, the last maybe the 4 or 5 years or so, whether this can in fact affect the standard testing. Our team at the University of Florida includes myself, David Privat, and Oscar LaFontaine, and Jinyoung Jack Wu, graduate students, and I must acknowledge their effort and working at home and doing all the work that they have done so far. Dr. David Roosh at Auburn University and consultant Dr. Daniel Smith have also made significant contributions to this process. Okay. One of the first tasks and most important tasks we had was to the convening of a research advisory group, and the group has met on one occasion, and essentially selecting very experienced personnel from the vinyl siding institute, manufacturers of vinyl siding systems, test labs, standard test labs, as well as Western University. Professor Greg Kopp is also here. They have been able to help us focus on their approach to the problems and to their solutions. In addition to having the research advisory group convened, the University of Florida has uploaded for their use a Dropbox a link whereby all the information, correspondence, documents, and the prior research has been stored for the Hello?
David, hold on a second. Hey, folks. I'm going to ask each of you to put your, the only person whose phone should not be on mute right now or whose phone and or go to meeting function is David. There's some background conversations you're probably just not aware because it's a conference call, but please put your phones and yourself on mute. I'm muting myself as well. That way David will have minimum interruptions and it'll be clearer for everybody. So if everybody would just take a second to mute their phones if they're using phones or mute the function on the go to meeting control panel. Go ahead, David. Thank you.
Okay, dokie. Thanks, Jeff. Okay. We have in phase one developed a test bed for developing the pressure distribution that occurs on a regular gable roof rectangular building. We call it a multi-chain pressure test bed. It includes the test bed you see in the upper right corner, which is a 12 foot by 16 foot area for constructing a vinyl siding cladding located horizontally. And above that sits these four chambers in two different sizes so that they can replicate what happens in terms of pressure from the corner of a building going inwards for about, about 12 feet. These chambers are attached to devices called pressure loading actuators, and each one of these, consider it a sophisticated vacuum or leaf blower. Each one of these can suck out, withdraw, or add air, which increases the pressure or reduces the pressure on the external surfaces of the vinyl siding cladding. In order to do that, you would see in the lower left corner, we use latex, which seals to the vinyl siding system itself, as well as to the structural frame of the chamber. And that enables us to have a good seal, creating this a confined space for the vacuum to occur without restraining the distortion of the panels and stuff. On the lower right, you would see a completed single chamber showing the latex on all four sides wrapped around the aluminum structural frame. And what is missing is the tops of that panel, which you would complete the cover. Okay. And so in this way, we have these four chambers, 1, 2, 3, 4, attached to the PLAs, and this is all controlled by a computer, a LabVIEW data acquisition system. As we have those, you see the red tubes, air tubes here, pneumatic tubes, which are attached to pressure sensors. Sensors measure the pressure within the chambers above the vinyl siding. This is essentially what the external pressure on the siding will be. And we have additional sensors installed between the underside of the siding and the wood sheathing of the wall framing structure. In terms of the data acquisition system, we have several controls. The variable frequency drives essentially control the voltage and therefore the overall power of a centrifugal fan, which control provides airflow. And then we also have the PLA valve controls, which selectively control the valve open and closed percentages. And that controls the pressure in the individual chambers themselves. The pressure transducer readings on the right, this is essentially the data that we're collecting to enable us to develop the pressure equalization factors. A lot of this work has been done and fully reported in the phase one of this project. Many of the projects done by Morrison and Cope 2013, Morrison and Miller 2017, Miller et al. At the Western University 2017 as well, established the theoretical basis of the pressure equalization factors, and actually they were able to develop pressure equalization factors on full-scale buildings. So our challenge here is not to develop it on the full-scale building, but to take out a section of that and see how best we can replicate those things in a standard way to measure these PEF values. Here I will turn this over to my co-PI, Dr. David Rouge. David, are you on? And you can walk us through the preliminary data that we've collected so far and what those results are.
Yes, I'm here. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yep.
All right, awesome. Well, good morning, everyone. And again, thanks for the opportunity to present here. I'm going to continue on and give you a little bit of an overview of some preliminary data that we collected. And I'll give some context here before I talk too much about the results themselves. The data that we're showing here is not part of our official test matrix, if you will. I'll present that here in just a second. This was more so exploring the performance capabilities of the SPLA in this setup with the vinyl siding systems, the four pressure chambers, et cetera. But in doing so, we thought, hey, we can collect some useful data as we do this. And I think it has some interesting results that we'd like to show here that relate both to the performance of the SPLA and what we can do with it, as well as to the future testing that we'll be doing. So what's shown here is in the plot are the PEF, the pressure equalization factor, which we define as the chamber pressure or the external pressure, the pressure on the top side of the vinyl siding, minus the cavity pressure on the underside of the vinyl. So that's the numerator there is the differential pressure across the vinyl siding, and then normalized by the external pressure that's being applied. All right, and we tested a few different cases. All of these static, okay? So these are all static pressure tests, and we're either using a uniform pressure, so all four chambers have the same pressure at different magnitudes, or we have each of the chambers having a different pressure than the one adjoining to it, okay? And we also tested in two different configurations, which I'll show in the next slide, one with a sealed edge, and then the other with an unsealed. And this relates to the kind of the boundaries of the vinyl siding specimen, if you will, and whether those are sealed. So essentially looking at is the volume, your test volume, is it sealed or not? And so a couple of interesting things from this. One is that when we have a nominally sealed test environment, test volume, if you will, even with just static, spatially varying pressures, we're able to generate a range of PEFs that trend in the same direction as what we were seeing in the full-scale data from IVHS and some of the data from Dr. Kopp as well at UWO. So it's promising. We're able to generate a range of PEFs, even for us statically, even for static pressure traces. But it also led to a couple of other things that we were able to see, and that is, one is that the sealed, the condition of the test setup, if you will, whether it's sealed or unsealed, plays a huge role in what those PEFs actually are. So ideally, we would have a perfectly sealed test chamber, and the only pressure changes would be coming from the four PLAs. But with a large setup like this, it's ambitious to think you can get a perfectly sealed system. And so it points to the importance of having some sort of a benchmark test to be able to quantify what that background leakage is, so you can see where, how much contributions that is making to the PEFs that we're getting. So speaking of that, if Dr. Bott, if you go ahead and go to the next slide, I'll show the difference between these two. Okay, so this is what we're talking about with the unsealed versus the sealed edge. So the unsealed edge there is just the ends of the vinyl siding are open to atmospheric. So that cavity pressure then remains more or less at atmospheric throughout the testing. And so you're able to build up, as you saw on the previous slide, you're able to build up a PEF of 1, because essentially the underside of the cavity, so that's in blue there at the top, the PEFs are essentially staying at 1 because the cavity pressure is remaining at atmospheric. And you're able to generate the full external pressure and the pressure differential then across the vinyl siding, because the leakage is so small across the vinyl siding. So then we sealed the edges there, and this was sort of just trying it out. And so this wasn't as good of a seal job as we can do in the remaining specimens, but clearly we see the impact of that and the difference it can make in the PEFs. So if you can advance two slides, actually, jump to 11. So main takeaways from, again, preliminary testing, we're not saying that these are research results that we're going to, recommend something from. This is just showing that the SPLA can generate a range of PEFs using even just static, spatially varying pressures. And also what we saw from where the valve position and fan, where we were on the fan curve and so on, we're pretty confident that we can even generate, pressures up to failure, at least in the static case. We're not quite sure yet with the dynamic. So we have a wide range of pressures that we should be able to apply to these systems and get a reasonable range of PEFs from it. And then lastly, again, and I'll show, if you can go ahead and advance, so it'll show the graphic there, that the PEFs are, again, conditioned upon the background leakage. So they're a function essentially of the area of the leakage to atmosphere, either through the edges of the specimen or from the underside through the sheathing and the gaps between sheathing, or leakage in the chambers themselves. It's a function of that area versus the area of leakage through the siding itself, so through gaps and where the panels interlock and so on. So it's that ratio that's important to understanding in order to put the right context to the PEFs that we're getting. All right, so that's what we're going to talk about in terms of a benchmark. And then quickly here, these are the vinyl siding test specimens that we are planning to develop. And Dr. Vada, if I miss anything on that, feel free to jump in. But we're looking at a all double 5-inch latch lap product with the Miami-Dade County product approval, a variety of different slightly different thicknesses on these, and what's different is primarily the wind rating. So we have kind of your standard siding product, 40 PSF wind load, single nail hem. And then we have the curled nail hem, which is rated 60 PSF, and then we have a full double male hem that's rated to 60 PSF as well. And so we'll want to be able to see whether these PEFs also vary between the different vinyl siding products as well. All right, and the next. Okay, so taking what we, the input that we got from the our first advisory panel meeting, a little bit more literature review, the preliminary testing that I showed earlier, we went back and revised the test matrix a little bit, and we've detailed that a little bit more in the interim report, in the appendix there, appendix B, I believe. So the idea here is that for each specimen, we'll have six specimens total, and for two replicates of each of the vinyl siding types. And for each one of those specimens, we're going to kind of approach this by breaking things down into three different pressure levels. Okay, so this is the maximum pressure, or in this case, I guess maximum negative pressure in any of the four chambers. And so we'll first run a whole series of tests with the maximum of negative 0.5 kPa, then we'll run that same sort of test again, but scaled up to negative 1. And then if we can, based upon the capabilities of the FPLA, as well as whether we're seeing anything close to failure or how the background leakage is changing, we'll try to do it at even a third pressure level as well to see. And again, at each of these levels, we're going to be running essentially the same time series, just scaled up to a different magnitude. And so for each of these pressure series, we're going to do a series of static uniform, static gradient, or spatially varying, the dynamic sine wave, but spatially varying as well, and then a dynamic wind trace test at each pressure level. Between each pressure level, we want to make sure we do a benchmark, meaning just a constant, you know, holding in a constant pressure, say negative 0.5 kPa for 30 seconds, just to make sure we can always go back to the same point and say, okay, is our background leakage, is the system changing? Or is the product still the same from test to test? And then lastly, we'll do ASTM B5206 to failure. For the specimens that we're doing, the other, you know, sine waves and wind, the dynamic wind series and so on, it's going to be a little bit of a modified 5206, but we think we can achieve the same test results with it. But we do then plan on having three of the specimens be only tested ASTM B5206, so we don't have to worry about, you know, maybe some of the other testing, you know, modifying the properties and changing the capacity in that way. The only test that will be conducted on is the D5206. So to give you an illustration, if you can go to the next slide, I think that got in here. So this is just an illustrative kind of time series, what that would look like for a single specimen. Okay, so you're starting off with kind of that benchmark, and then you're running to a uniform static where all four pressure chambers are seeing the same pressure. Then you're doing another benchmark, then you're doing a spatially varying static, and then you do a spatially varying sine waves, and then spatially varying dynamic wind traces. And then once you run through all that, then we step it up to the next pressure level and run this same time series again. So we feel like this would be a pretty robust way of capturing several different configurations while simultaneously making sure that our system is not changing as we go through these tests. And we can be confident in the PEF that we get out of it as a result, and can then look at how we can, what tests are able to replicate the full scale or the most realistic PEFs the best. All right, I think that is, at this point, I'll turn it back over. One more. And then lastly here on the dynamic, the wind traces as well. What we're using as a source right now to develop is the full-scale data from the what's called the Werfel Building, the Wind Engineering Research Field Laboratory out at Texas Tech University. So this is a full-scale building that they instrumented in the early 2000s and have, you know, years of, I guess about a decade's worth of data from actual wind events that have come through, and they're measuring wall pressures. So what you see there is just a layout of the actual building with the different pressure taps. And we're taking a few cases of that and looking at sidewall pressures, leeward wall pressures, and cornering flow, et cetera, and pulling out some averaged wall pressures that we will then use as inputs for the PLAs into our setup. So able to use full scale real data and then average that into our into the input pressures that we're using for the SPLA. So just wanted to highlight that. Right, and now I think I'll turn it back over to Dr. Perot.
All right, great. Thanks, Dr. Roush. So you know the essential thing is that IBHS and Western University have shown that the use of single chamber is inconsistent with generating the pressure equalization factors that occur at a real building. And here you can see the reasons why. If you look at leeward wall shown here, divided into zones 1, 2, 3, 4, you would see that in zone 1, the average pressure might be as high as 2 kPa, but in zone 5, 4, the average pressure is, you know, less than 1, okay, at its peak. And these pressures are varying in an inconsistent manner. And it is all these variations that are required to be established so that you can actually have the realistic pressure equalization factors. It's not simply a question of what the external pressure is and the gap pressure, but there is a movement and airflow within the gap from areas of high pressure to areas of low pressure, as well as into and out of those joints within the siding or any discontinuous metal system. So that, and then the last slide here is giving you an idea of what we perceive as the extent of stuff. This is all contingent upon us at the University of Florida being physically able to get the laboratory working, but we will be constructing the wood frame walls, wearing vinyl siding, and working with our advisory group partners on the actual selection of the vinyl siding. We hope to match the sidings that were used in the Western University testing, as well as in the IBHS testing, so that we have, again, some sort of consistency between those, no other reason. Also, we would like to, if it is possible, if travel is available and work is able to happen within the next couple of weeks, to have a technician from the vinyl siding installers to work with us and to supervise the installation per the manufacturer's specifications. Once that is done, the testing of the single nail, curled nail hem, and double nail hem continue. And currently we are working, one of the impediments we have right now, getting the dynamic trace the software done, and we're hoping to have a consultant working on that from his home in the next couple of weeks. Okay, and so with that, I thank you for your attention, and Dr. Roush and myself will be happy to take any questions on any part of the report that you have.
All right, so what I'd like to do first is I'll ask if any member of the Hurricane Research Advisory Committee has any clarifying questions. I'll then go to the structural task and ask the same, and then to the public, and then I'll come back and say, does anybody have any comments they want to make? So let's keep our clarifying questions first so we all have the same level of understanding before we have any comments. So Hurricane Research Advisory Committee members, if you'd like to speak, please identify you, give me your name, I'll stack a list and we'll go in order, then I'll do the same with the structural, then the public. Who wants to start from the Hurricane Research Advisory Committee with questions, if you have any?
This is Dr. Ann Cope from IBHS. I have a statement to offer. It's not really a question, but I have a statement to offer that it's encouraging to see additional research to corroborate the findings of interesting things that are happening with pressure equalization factors. And while this research is particularly useful to corroborate that that piece, it will be interesting and is not currently predictive what changes may or may not be needed to standardize testing methods. So that's a comment I just wanted to put out there. I think at the end of this research, a group of interested researchers that have been doing work in this area should have conversations about what it might mean for testing, that we should have further conversations about that, and not just one individual study. I think there's been a good body of work, and that a conclusion about standardized testing should not be part of the scope of this effort.
Right. Okay, thanks. So I want to go back to the process and ask people to first offer their questions. We'll come, and then I'm going to come back and ask for comments, but I didn't want to be too strict about it first time out. So who else from the HRAC has a, something they don't understand would like to have clarified by either Dr. Pravat or Dr. Roche? Anybody? All right, and don't forget that your phones may be muted. Structural Tech members, does anybody have any clarifying questions, something they don't understand would need further clarification on before we get into the final piece of the discussion?
Okay, this is Jamie.
Sure, Jamie, go ahead.
Okay, so I guess the first question I would have is regarding the fastening that's going to be used for the vinyl siding in these tests. I have seen some reports from Hurricane Michael where some of the failures consisted of staples being used to fasten vinyl siding. I see here reference to use of Miami-Dade County approved products, and typically these are requiring fastening with nails of specific lengths, of specific types. Is there any specification that's going to be followed in the mocking up of these specimens for their fastening?
David or David?
Jamie, this is Dave Pravat here. Yes, this is essentially we wish to follow every detail that is possible in the laboratory setup from the Florida building code, as well as any product approvals that we have from the manufacturers. So idea will be is we will get a contract with a vinyl siding installer who is certified for installing Miami-Dade County approved product in Florida, and have them work with our team to do the perhaps maybe one day of the first installation, or if it is even possible to do for all three particular vinyl sidings we use.
Sure, sure. Thank you, David. I mean, obviously the head diameter of nails, if these are ring shank nails, the penetration that they have into the plywood substrates, all of this is going to be is critical in the capacity of their performance. I've got a few other follow-up questions, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
Specifically on the reference to the Miami-Dade County approvals, possibly in the tables referencing some kind of notice of acceptance number that ties the specifications to a set of approved drawings that would contain all of these details, that might be helpful. The other thing is on clarifying of the sealing of the sides of the vinyl siding. Am I correct to understand that when the sides are sealed, the pressure equalization factor increases?
Okay,
or does it diminish?
If we look at taking those two questions, Jamie, first of all, the notice of acceptance number is probably what should be there, and I think that that's a good suggestion. looking at the ceiling of the vinyl siding systems, if we look at slide number 10, the top photograph shows the unsealed version in our test setup, and the bottom photograph shows a sealed version. So essentially you have a 12 foot by approximately 8 foot rectangle of vinyl siding where all the edges are open in the first case, and then we seal them in the second. So let's say that the upper version here, we have those edges are at atmospheric pressure, and because of the amount of air that flows, that pretty much dominates the pressures that we see in the cavity pressure itself. And therefore, the essence of that is that there is potentially no difference. These are the values you see here in blue. Where's my pointer for something? My pointer is disappearing. There it goes. These values here in blue, iterating somewhere between 0.85, say, and 1. After we have sealed the chambers, the data for constant pressure shown in red, and the data for gradient pressure shown in black, then we have a much larger range of pressure equalization factors. Okay, this range of pressure equalization factors, as Dr. Roush said, this is far more consistent with the observations from the IBHS testing itself, whereby when you have a very low denominator, you have when you have small pressures, you have a wide range, but as you get towards the peak pressure, there is a smaller range of the PES.
James, does that answer your question?
In part, I'm still a little bit fuzzy, but I think I'll just read a little bit more through the documents, because the document that I downloaded off the agenda doesn't quite match that graph that was being shown a second ago. Mm-hmm. That one has a little bit more information on it there.
Okay.
The blue measurements are closer to the 1, and that's yep. when the sides are not sealed. Once you seal the sides, then your pressure equalization factor starts dipping below 1, and it kind of normalizes at higher pressures at about 0.7 is kind of what this shows.
Yeah, again, as Dr. Roush says, I will not use this as any sort of data. This is just a shakedown test.
But this would be kind of what would be shown in some final graphic of the results and such, as to how to interpret, how to read these results.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. And then if I may, lastly, has there or will there be any consideration for varying dimensions of vinyl siding? I see that the selected specimens are all with a 5-inch lap cover, which overall, I think in that double lap would have like a 10 or 11-inch overall cover. There are various designs of siding that might have different dimensions. Is that something that all of those others' performance is going to stem from this, or will there be additional testing done for those varying sizes?
I would be advised by the advisory group, as well as by what is typical in Florida. I don't expect this work here to try to address every type of vinyl siding that's out there, or perhaps say using staples as opposed to nails, et cetera, because as Dr. Cope said, this is not, we're not looking at this as a standard test or something to develop a standard. We're just looking at it to see if there is a consistent way for measuring the pressure equalization factors. So, but of course, as time goes on, and if this work proves to be beneficial, there is going to be places for further testing.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Any other structural TAC members have any clarifying questions you'd like to ask?
Okay. Jeff, Jim Schock here.
All right. Trying to follow the order, Doe and then Jim. Go ahead, Doe.
All right, thank you. David, just a follow-up question on the sealed and unsealed sample there. If you go back to the slide with the picture. Thank you. I understand that this was just testing information just for a reference point, and I think it's a good set of information. Just a question. I understand the graph and the information that's telling us, but going forward, you're saying that the sealed sample is more representative of what we saw in the IBHS testing and in the real world. So for the test samples going forward, are these samples going to be sealed?
Yes, that is the idea, because it does not seem that there is any variation. It is dominated by the airflow through the edges of the panels into this system. And Dr. Roosh, if you want to add anything here, please go ahead.
You summarized it nicely. I mean, it's going forward, we do plan to seal the edges. We think that's most representative of reality and also matches what IBHS has found. The important takeaway here, again, was just that we're, despite our best efforts, you're never going to get a perfectly sealed system. And so it's important to at least understand what influence the, this kind of background leakage has on the PES, and therefore at least try to quantify kind of where you fall. Are you a really leaky system, a very tight system? Where do you fall in that spectrum to provide the right context to the PES?
So just a follow up. So going forward, just sealing these samples will get you, from what I'm seeing, a conservative number, because any leakage that occurs in the real world will get you closer to the unsealed numbers. So what we're doing is, what you're doing is testing, it's conservative, the number that you'll be getting, correct?
Mm-hmm. No.
Possibly we've had some discussions on this, on what, on what that would actually look like, because in the real world situation, though, you don't, what is atmospheric pressure there? Because the entire system is undergoing, these spatially and temporally variant pressures. So unless you have, consider maybe the, an opening back to the inside of the building where you have more of a stable kind of atmospheric pressure that's not varying, and that's open to the underside, if you have some significant leak gaps there, perhaps it's more of the unsealed case. But I think with the house wrap and the other products and how the vinyl siding systems are installed, I think in the real world, we're going to be closer to that, what we're saying is a sealed system here, where the spatial pressure gradients are primarily dominated by the external pressures.
All right. Thank you. All right. Any other structural tech members have any questions before I go to the public?
Yeah, Jeff, Jim Shaw.
Oh, sorry, Jim. Yeah, I got a list here. Go ahead, Jim.
That's okay. I may be asking the obvious, but I understand you're using the Miami-Dade approval process. My question is, the installation of the samples, are they going to be consistent then with the Vinyl Siding Institute installation manual?
Jim, can you repeat that? What I heard was we're using the Miami-Dade County as so essentially, and is it consistent with the VSI's manual.
Yeah, that's correct. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. So we want to work with our advisory group members to utilize a systems in the VSI's manual that are also approved by the for its use in Florida. I doubt there may be other things besides the Miami-Dade County, which is also approved, and I see no reason why we may not want to do something like that as well. But that would be in discussions with the advisory group.
David, this is Momadani. Just to add to what's being discussed here, one thing I know Jamie have mentioned that we should note the NOA number for these manufacturers or the product that be selected. I would caution about that. I know from experience when we did a fastener corrosion resistance project, manufacturers were concerned about including them in the research, specifically, the reference product approval and all that. So I would suggest we keep the study neutral. Sure, we can select products, but we should not really, target certain manufacturer in the testing and evaluation. We can select the product and test them without doing that. The other thing is that I know it seems that the focus has been on looking at products that approved, evaluated, and all that through the Miami-Dade product approval program. But as you know, we have state product approval, and also we have manufacturer and product that's approved outside Miami-Dade. I think you want to look at that, maybe select one of those product, approval to be able to represent, what's going on in the state. The other thing is that I would look in the code, section R703.11 of the Florida Building Code, residential for vinyl siding. It does give a specific installation instruction, fasteners. It does call for mainly nails, which is ring shank, and it gives you specific specification for them, and that's if the manufacturer doesn't provide a specific fastener requirement. So I would, I would really probably if you're gonna do this, probably I would look at all this and try to be kind of representative of what's going in the code, what's in product approval by Miami-Dade, or in addition to maybe taking one product approved through the state for outside Miami-Dade and Broward. Thank you.
Okay. This is David Pravat again. Those are excellent points. Thank you so much for bringing them to my attention. As you could see in this slide here, I have the last minute modification. Those white squares, which hides the product name. I think it is a pretty standard for us not to use the product names and so on, and to just generically discuss the single nail hem, curl nail hem, and double nail hem. In addition, the idea, I think it's a wise one on your part that we use a product, at least one or more, from this state. Product. Well, in particular, the main product that
David, excuse me, David.
Yep. Go ahead.
All of a sudden, it just kind of goes a dead silence, and then there's a lot of electronic noises, and you're missing half of what David's saying. I missed most of what Mo said. I wonder.
It's probably a function of using just the computer audio without a headset, and it sometimes tends to pick up more or less. So, anyway, go ahead, David. Joe was just saying he's having difficulty hearing you, that you were coming in and out.
somewhat.
Well, my apologies. I will talk slower. But yes, I think it's a good idea to use a state approval product as well as maybe if there is a VSI approved product. In particular, we may be able to find some products that are approved, say, for use in the Panhandle that are not approved in Miami-Dade, and that would be a very good way to see the entire state coverage. And thank you, Mo. We will use and include the R703.11, the vinyl siding specifications from the code, and use that as a basis. At this time, I don't believe it would be useful with this limited testing to try to do any performance of things that are not approved by the code, for instance, using staples or so, if that is not in the current code.
Okay, great. Any other questions from the structural tack before I go to the public? All right. So, members of the public, if you'd wish to ask a question or make a comment, go ahead and do so. Then I'll come back to our committees and if they have any additional comments before we look to accept the reports. Okay, who would like to speak from the public? Just give me your name first.
This is Matt Dobson from the Vinyl Siding Institute. Can you hear me?
Yep. Okay, Matt, who else would like to speak?
Joe Belcher,
Royal Building Products. All right, Joe Belcher, and who is the next one?
Stan Hathorn.
All right, Stan. Anybody else? All right, Matt. You're Matt Dobson. You're up first. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, just a couple quick comments. We appreciate Dr. Brevet's efforts with this study thus far, and have been participating with our industry. A number of members have been on the call as well. We want to be closely tied to as things are moving forward, and are certainly willing to provide a certified trainer from our certified installer program to help with the installation for the next set of tests. We just received a report yesterday, so we're looking through it currently. I just want to be careful, and it's a little bit online with what Ann Cope said earlier from IBHS. You know, the scope of this testing is very specific in the contract, and some of the statements in the report that were sent out seem to be outside of the scope of the contract. So we want to be careful how this research is portrayed and what it's trying to do. But we're appreciative of being involved, and we look forward to the continued work. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. Belcher, Joe?
Yes, I'm sorry. First, I'd like to say this has been very good information and a good report, and thanks to everybody. But I really have a concern over the quality of the system here, because with the virus, we're going to be doing a lot more of these meetings. We've been making decisions. I missed a lot of the, in fact, when I brought it up, when I interrupted David and brought it up, it sounded like maybe there was some response, but I didn't get that.
Jeez.
And what I'm wanting to know is that on my end, if I need to do something here, I want to make sure I take care of it. Is anybody else experiencing weird electronic noises?
Joe, are you able to hear me clearly?
Right now I'm hearing you, but during some of the other parts, you were kind of in and out.
So what I'm going to suggest is it's actually must be on your end. You may have a weak internet connection because I heard you sort of fading in and out as well. I was able to hear David pretty well throughout the discussion, and I'm using a high quality headset plugged directly into my computer to minimize background noise and all that. So it may be on your end. A weak internet connection sometimes will give you a problem, or if you're using a headset or not using a headset, I'm not sure which. A headset sometimes, if it's not a great quality one, could be problematic. Or if you're just speaking using your VoIP and your computer without the headset, that kind of cuts in and out too. So it sounds like it's kind of on your end.
Okay, that's what I needed to know. Thank you. I'm sorry to take everybody's time with that, but I needed to
Hey, Joe.
High quality.
I found that if I plug my computer directly with an Ethernet cable into my modem, it worked a little better than wireless.
Okay. So, Stan, you're next.
Stan Hathorne, Oil Building Products. I appreciate everybody, all the comments today. I certainly appreciate Ann's comments and Matt's as well. I just wanted to offer a couple of thoughts when it comes to the installation side. There was quite a bit of discussion about that and concerns about the different approval processes and products to be looked at. You know, one of the questions that had come up earlier was in reference to using the Miami-Dade and then how does product approval, you know, products that are approved through that process, and then how would that be impacted in the rest of the state? And I think the point there is that, you know, some products might be installed in a different manner than the code minimum for the rest of the state in order to meet the Miami-Dade approvals. So I think that's a very valid point that we need to look at, and I know that Dr. Bravatt had agreed that we would look at those other products through different approval processes, the basic state approval or even the state approval for HVHZ. So I think that that's important. The code language for fastening I think is critical, and I'm pretty confident that even the VSI installation manual will pretty well match up with that from a code minimum requirement. And that's probably the target that we would want to look at in most of these scenarios, just to so that we are covering the majority of the state and making sure that we're doing things in a good way. You know, the concern, I guess, that I would look at from an install standpoint is travel will be difficult. You know, so hopefully we can find somebody that, from an certified installer standpoint, that can get there in a short period of time. I know most of us are probably on lockdown and won't be able to do that. But anyway, overall good. I appreciate it, and I have appreciated the dialogue with Provide and trying to move forward in a good way. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Any other public, before I go back to the committee and seek acceptance of the report? Okay, so what we need to do now is move ourselves into a posture of a motion to accept the draft interim report, and I'll do that for each of the committees. So Hurricane Research Advisory Committee members, does anybody have any comments they'd like to make, or if you're ready for a motion, I'd be happy to entertain that as well.
Mr. Chair, this is Sergio Espinosa. I chimed in right after the roll call.
So okay,
I
great.
For the record that I have been here, and I do have a follow-up. And it kind of concerns the last comment made by the industry member, and it follows Mo Benatti's comment about looking at the code requirement. And I think that, you know, we're talking about testing Miami-Dade products, HVAC products and non-HVAC products. I think it should be kept to whatever the current code requirements are in an effort to validate what the current code prescriptive requirements are, and whether or not those are good or need to be changed. And I think at the beginning, Mo mentioned that, you know, this may lead to updates of the building code for Florida. This is for Florida that we're talking about. So I think it should be based on what the current code requires for the installation in both HVAC and non-HVAC zones. And then validate that or come up with a testing that we need to, you know, improve on those prescriptive requirements that are currently in the code. Notwithstanding any product approvals that go above and beyond those requirements. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sergio. Any other committee members, HRAC members, have any comments before we look for a motion?
This is Ann Cope again. I just have a quick comment. The product approvals testing and the testing done for the high-velocity hurricane zone are very similar in nature. And I just wanted to put that comment out there, because I jumped in early and said, hey, you know, while we're getting all this information, we need to then, from the conclusions of this report, which I think everybody else who has talked about testing and talked about what to do with the Florida-specific codes, with the Florida-specific product approval testing, and with product approval testing in general, I think we're all saying the same thing, but I just wanted to be very, very clear about it, that from the conclusions of this report, and the conclusions of a report that is due to come out of University of Western Ontario, we could then be in a position to take a good look at that stuff. So I just wanted to be real clear about that and make sure that I wasn't suggesting that no action be taken. I'm suggesting that action be taken after a review of the body of knowledge as a whole. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other committee members?
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff Schnellman. I'm sorry, my phone was having problems when you did roll call. I've been on the call the entire time.
Okay, so we have all... How about Craig Perino? Are you there? All right, so we have 12 of 13 members of our HRAC. Okay, well, so I think this would be a good opportunity to ask, is there someone like to make the motion to accept the draft interim report, experimental evaluation of pressure equalization factors and wind resistance of vinyl siding systems using a multi-chamber pressure test bed. Who would like to make
Joe
a motion?
Joe Belcher, so moved.
Motion Council, Joe.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any additional discussion on the motion? No discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. It's unanimous on a 12-0 vote. Structural TAC members, any comments and or a motion for the same?
Thompson moved to accept.
Ronald second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 All right. Any opposed? It's also unanimous. Let me just check one quick thing. Has either Cy or Joe Hetzel or Craig joined the call for the structural TAC? All right. I'm going to go back to the HRAC committee and move toward an adjournment here. Mo, do you want to talk a little bit about next steps? Presumably the next steps is, you know, as we go through our next code cycle, additional testing and information will come through, and this committee will have an opportunity to review that and ultimately for the 2023 code, perhaps make suggestions for any enhancements to the code.
This is Mo Madani. I think for the next step, there's two things that's coming. One is, as you know, we're approaching the end of this physical year, which is really will be soon, asking for ideas or for research projects, potential research projects. So for the Hurricane Research Advisory Committee, keep in mind that we will be asking for that very soon. So if you have an idea of research that we need to undertake that is structural in nature and will improve the structural aspect of buildings for wind, really resist hurricane wind. We need to know that. We need to make sure if you're planning to propose an idea for research, we look not only for the idea, we look for the specific, the scope of work that you feel that should be undertaking to do the work. So I'm hoping that next time when we meet for the Hurricane Research Advisory Group, we will be asking for those topics. As we move forward, I think also if there is any sticking issue or a complex issue that we see, we also will have that before the Hurricane Research Advisory Committee for review and advisement to the Commission on it. That's really what I have, but we will keep you posted as we move forward. The part of the building code development for the 2020 update is going planned, and we will have the first draft on our website posted by April 20th, and we'll move with the rule adoption hearings and all that. But we will keep you posted as we go. Thank you.
Thank you, Mo.
Mo, Jim Schock here. Could I ask a quick question, please?
Sure.
Yeah, where are we on the water intrusion guidelines that were being developed? Are we going to have another meeting on that?
That's really, we have a project, as you know, and with Dr. Bravat, and he's assuming, David, are you still online? I know we'll have the interim research project report on it. Is it due for April 15th? And again, we will convene the two groups, structural and Hurricane Research Advisory Committee, to review the interim reports and provide comments to David on it. So it's coming.
All right. Thank you, Mo.
Welcome.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and do a closing roll call and then ask Chairman Schock to adjourn the meeting. Chairman Schock, are you still here?
Yeah.
All right. Sergio. If you're muted, just unmute your phone for a second. Sergio, you still on, yes?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry, I had to mute it. You're right.
No problem.
Nothing else at this time.
All right, Joe Belcher, are you on?
I'm on, and I have corrected my problems. Thanks for those that texted and emailed me. Thank you.
Right. You sound so much better, Joe.
Yeah, I went to computer instead of Skype. That's working a lot better. Thank you.
All right, David Compton, Commissioner Compton.
Here.
Ann Cope, Ann.
I'm here.
Mark Mickelson, Mark.
I'm here.
Fred, all right. Bud.
Present.
Angela.
I'm here.
Commissioner Schiffer. Brad. Jeffrey Schnellman.
Here.
Vince Sejas.
Here.
Commissioner Swell, Brian.
Here.
I had it right.
And Brad, you're there, yes? Brad Schiffer? Well, Brad may have
I'm here.
Off. Oh, you are here. So we still have 12 of 12, so that concludes. Commissioner Schock, would you please adjourn the Hurricane Research Advisory Committee meeting with the understanding that the structural TAC members will stay on the phone.
All right. First of all, I want to thank everybody for participating. These are difficult times, and I know it's a little bit inconvenient, but I think we'll work through it, and we'll be fine. So with that, the Hurricane Advisory Committee is hereby adjourned, and the structural TAC committee, please stay on the line. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. All right.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Let us continue with our business, which is to provide the commission with recommendations on the four comments that were received. So what I'll do is I'll introduce each comment, allow the presenter an opportunity to, pros and cons with our normal 3-minute time limits. If there are rebuttals, it'll be a 2-minute rebuttal, one for each position, pro and con, not one for each person. Then we'll come back to the structural attack. We'll discuss. If you have any questions of the proponents, feel free to ask those, and we'll once they finish their comment, we'll get your questions answered, and then we'll provide that you'll decide whether you want to recommend approval or not approval. There'd be a motion to approve the comment. If it achieves the 67% threshold, that's the recommendation. If it doesn't, it would be NAR. If there is no motion or nobody wants to make a motion, that will also be considered a recommendation not to approve the comment to the commission. I think we're all familiar with the process. But that's a quick overview. Does anybody have any questions on the process? All right, then let us begin. We're going to start with comment number one, which is SFBCB Chapter 16, comment number one. It's on the first page of the Structural Technical Advisory Committee's comments by Eric Stafford from IBHS. Eric, are you on the phone?
I am. Jeff, can you hear me?
Sure can. Eric, go ahead. I'll tell you what, before we start, let me just say one more thing. I'll give you about a 30-second warning if you need it, just so you have it. So I apologize in advance for if I have to interrupt. It works better. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Jeff. This is really a cleanup of some items that we put in the working with Day County last time around to clean up some of the rooftop equipment requirements, rooftop loads. And the code, what we have in the sixth edition corresponds to what's in ASC 716. I know there was a lot of concern at that time we were going through these updates, whether or not we were including ASC 716. You guys may or may not remember that. But this, there was an error in the high velocity hurricane zone. So to fix that, we brought over provisions from ASC 716, some of the new rooftop loading requirements. And since we were doing that for the high velocity, we did the same thing for the non-high velocity hurricane zone. Now with the adoption of ASC 716, that's going to be in the seventh edition of the code, this is no longer even needed, and actually conflicts with, as far as the section numbering in ASC 716. So this is already covered in ASC 7, and it's just, like I said, we're simply correlating with ASC 7 and removing some inconsistencies.
All right, great. Thanks, Eric. Does anybody else in the public wish to comment in support? If you feel free just to say I agree or, whatever you want to do, just say your name and representation. Go ahead.
Joe Belcher in support.
All right. Anybody else from the public?
Mike Silvers, FRSA, in support.
Very good. Anybody else? All right. Anybody have any opposition? Hearing none, I'm going to go back to the structural tack. Does anybody wish to make a motion to approve the comment? Recommend approval.
Lavrich, move to approve. Lavrich, move to approve.
Compton, second.
Lazio, second.
All right, well, we've got 3 seconds, but what I actually heard was Lavrich made the motion, and I think Steve Strong made the second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous on an 8-0 in favor vote. All right, moving on to comment number 2, found on page 3. It's structural FBCB chapter 16, submitted by Gaspar Rodriguez from Miami-Dade County. Gaspar, go ahead.
This is Jamie Gaskin. I'll be speaking on behalf of comment 2.
Oh, sure. Go ahead, Jamie.
Essentially, this is a correlation with ASC 716 for the now new wind speed risk categories, rather, for risk category 4. We noted that on the draft of the code, categories 3 and 4 were lumped together, which is no longer the case under ASC 716. So we simply provided the designation of wind speed for risk category 4 for both Miami-Dade and Broward counties, as they are shown there on the comment.
Thank you, Jamie. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support?
Belcher, FHV, in support.
Anybody else?
Silvers, FSA, support.
Very good. Anybody else?
Eric Stafford, IBHS, we're in support of this.
Very good. Anybody else? Anybody have any opposition? Hearing none, going back to the TAC, is there a motion in support of the comment? All right, that was a little confusing. I think the original motion was made by Steve Strawn, right, Steve?
Yes, that's correct.
And the second was made by?
Compton.
Commissioner Compton. Strawn and Compton. Any discussion on the motion? No discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous on an 8-0 in support vote. All right. Our next comment is comment number 3, found on page 4 of the document, submitted by Joe Belcher from the Florida Home Builders Association. Mr. Belcher, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Joe Belcher for the Masonry Association of Florida and the Florida Independent Concrete Associated Products Industry. This MAF and FICAP, and we're just simply updating the ASTM standard on grout C476. The standard was sent out to the TAC and to the staff, and I'm just sure if there's any questions, we request approval. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else wish to speak in support? Anybody in opposition? All right, hearing no comments, going back to the TAC, is there a motion to approve the comment?
Okay. Labridge, move to approve.
All right, we have Labridge and Strawn on motion in a second. Is there any discussion? No discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 All right. Any opposed? It's unanimous on an 8-0 in support vote. All right, comment number four. It's found on page 6 of your document. Structural FPCBR by Fernando Pages of the Vinyl Siding Institute. Fernando, are you here? Is anybody here to speak on?
This is Matt Dobson with the Vinyl Siding Institute. I can speak for Fernando this morning.
Sure, Matt, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. This change is basically just to make sure the standards for polypropylene siding, insulated vinyl siding, and vinyl siding are up to date, which does include, just for everybody's information, increased pressure equalization factor in the standards for vinyl siding and insulated vinyl siding. So we would ask the committee to make sure those standards are up to date to keep pace with what the industry is now doing and certifying too. In addition, there was an incorrect change for the reference of polypropylene siding relative to which is on the last page, which basically gives you an option for conducting a flame spread test when using polypropylene siding high density settings. There was an and instead of an or. It should be or, and that's what you're seeing on the last page of the change, which basically correctly replicates what's currently in the IRC. So we would ask for approval for those changes I just mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support?
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
Hey. Thanks, Eric Stafford, IBHS. A couple of comments. No problem with the update of the standards. And I think Mo would probably catch this anyway, but, we don't typically put the dates of standards in the code text. That's usually done in Chapter 35 or Chapter 46 in the code. And I guess a question to Matt, and I would have called you earlier, but I was just looking at this. On the reference for the polypropylene siding, it references, this you're adding in, that the label has to, it has to be certified and labeled as conforming to D7254. Then you're adding in section 703.14.2 or 14.3. 703.14.3 is the dealing with the flame spread, and 14.2 deals with the fire separation distance. I'm just wondering, and I know that's consistent with the building code, but how do you put that on the, how do you certify and label it that way when that's dealing with an installation method?
Yeah, I mean, this was not a change that we were supportive of in the ICOs, but we're just making it consistent. So the product, just to everybody understand what we're talking about here, if the product was used in a high-density setting, 5 feet or closer to the property line, then it would need to be certified to the E84 flame spread test, which would be done in a code compliance report typically. So if the product is used beyond that 5 foot separation distance, then it does not have that specific requirement. Eric, it's not the best code language. Eric, it's not something that we authored, but we're just trying to make it consistent. The way that it was proposed, it would require all products, no matter high density or not, be required to have that flame spread certification by having, so we're just changing the or. It was from and to or. We're not changing how the code was written in general. And I agree, it's not the best code language, but it is what it is.
All right. Any additional public comment?
Eric Stafford, if I could ask one more, is there a, and maybe this is for Mo, do we have one more bite at the apple? Maybe could get with Matt, and we could make the corrections to the building code as well, as the building code is written kind of the same way as Matt said, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me the way it's written.
But I know what Matt's trying to do. If we could get one more bite at the apple, we could probably fix this language pretty easily.
This is Mo Madani. I think, as you know, we are in the tail end of the process. I know when this came up, I did have some questions about it with Fernando, and I think they're targeting. I talked to Fernando and really and looked at what is really they're trying to do. It is consistent with what's in the IRC 2018. They do have the same settings. And after looking at it, I didn't see any problem with the certification aspect of it. And if you read the two sections, it's kind of one provides for fire separation and the other one, I think that it has to do with the labeling. So I think at this point, I cannot say to you, don't submit a comment. You're welcome to submit a comment in the code, but remember, we are in the tail end of the process. So it's right, more of a, I leave it to you guys. If you want to submit a comment, I know we have the commission, the workshop on the 7th, April 7th. If you feel like you want to, look at this, sure. And if you want to submit a comment, I can't promise anything, but hey, we're still having a workshop on the 7th, sure.
So let me follow up with that just for a second. As Mo said, it's late in the game, but if you did, we're going to make comment, it would be best if it was submitted electronically in advance of the meeting so that it could be posted to the BCIS, everybody have access to it and the commissioners, as opposed to trying to do it in the room. And if you could get it 7 days in front of the commission meeting, that would be even better. And have the comment to Mo's, so he could have Jim posted to the BCIS in that area as a comment to this one. That would expedite the potential for proper consideration of it.
Yeah, and that'd be great. Jeff. Yes.
Yeah, Matt and I, we'll get together. We'll talk
about it. All right. Okay. Yeah. Any additional
we can do something quickly and take care of this. That's great. Thanks, Eric. Happy to do sure. So.
Okay, so any additional public comment? If not, coming back to the TAC, does anybody wish to make the motion to accept the comment or to recommend approval of it?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Steve Strong, just a quick question, if I may, to Matt Dobson.
Sure, Steve.
Matt, I'm just curious. I don't recall if there was a change to that in the 2021 code development cycle. Is that correct?
Yeah, this was a correction to a proposal that was submitted during the code development cycle. So this is a revision to an original proposal.
So the work that you and Eric will do will sort of bring it back up to the 2021 or what's been approved for 2021.
Well, yeah, this change would do that, but I think what Eric and I will do will actually make it clearer and better, and that will be good, and then we could bring it back to the I-code too, to make that better. So, yeah. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So the question is, do you want to recommend approval of this with the understanding that there'll be a change, or would you rather just do an NAR and let them make the change and let the commission make the decision? I mean, you could make the motion that you would that you recommend approving this with the modifications that would be made by Eric and Matt for the commission's consideration. Maybe that would be the cleanest motion to make.
I'd make that motion, Jeff Strawn.
All right. So the motion is to recommend approval of this with the understanding that there'll be some revisions made by industry for the commission's consideration, and that's what you're actually recommending, correct?
Correct.
Is there a second?
Second.
And who made the second?
CW.
Oh, CW, okay. Is there a discussion? All right, all in favor of this approval with the caveat of the revised language, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous on an 8-0 vote. Okay, so that's all the comments. Is there any additional, is there any other comment that anybody would like to make before I do a second roll call? All right, Commissioner Schock.
I'm here yet.
Commissioner Compton.
Here.
I'm assuming Cy's still not here. Jamie Gascon.
Here.
Michael Garascio.
Here.
I'm assuming Joe Hetzel's not on. Do Kim.
I'm here.
Dan Laverich.
Here.
CW.
Here.
I'm assuming Craig's not on. And then Steve Strawn.
Here.
We have the same eight we started with. Commissioner Schock, would you please adjourn us?
Sure. Again, thank you everyone for participating. And with no further business, we'll stand adjourned.
Hey, Commissioner Schock, it's Tom Campbell. Could you stay in the meeting,
sure,
please? Thank
sure
you. And Jeff, you too.
Okay.
Thanks. Thank
Thanks
you, guys.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.